Welcome to Season 4 of Lightwork Presents Everything is Connected, where we share the interesting and inspiring stories of artists, critical thinkers, thought leaders, and art professionals on a wide range of topics
about life and work.
We share ideas on our inspirations and the influences that affect our lives. I'm your host, Fola Shadi Olugunduru, and I look forward to sharing the conversations I have with artists and creative professionals across the art industry and beyond. As I travel to art fairs, gallery openings, and events within the creative industries both in the U.S. and abroad, join me in discovering and learning about some of today's most interesting and dynamic artists and creative professionals. If you're new to the show, I'm happy to have you here. If you've been on this journey with me, welcome back. Let's get it. On this episode, I'm joined by Maria Elena Ortiz. Maria is currently the curator at the Modern Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Maria comes to the Modern from the Perez Art Museum in Miami, aka the PAM, where she curated discerning exhibitions such as Allied with Power, African and African Diaspora Art from the George M. Perez Collection, and The Other Side of Now, Foresight in Caribbean Art. While at PAM, and with the support of the Mella Foundation, Maria founded and spearheaded the Caribbean Cultural Institute, a curatorial platform dedicated to Caribbean art. During her tenure in Miami, Maria worked to diversify the museum's collection, securing works by Simone Lee, Bisa Butler, Boni Ramirez, and more. Maria joined the Modern in 2022. Her first exhibition with the museum, Surrealism and Us, Caribbean and African Diasporic Artists Since 1940, is on view now until July 28th. The show, inspired by the history of surrealism in the Caribbean, with connections to notions of the Afro-surreal in the United States, represents a global perspective. It's the first exhibition of its kind seen through an intergenerational lens that is dedicated to the Caribbean and African diasporic art presented at the Modern. Listen in as we talk about her latest show, what inspires her work, and what she's most passionate about. Let's dive into my next episode with Maria Elena Ortiz. Maria Elena Ortiz, I'm so happy to have you join me on an episode of Everything is Connected. Would you please introduce yourself today?
Of course, and thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be in here. I am Maria Elena Ortiz, curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth.
So in your role at the Modern, you've just opened up a new exhibition, which I would easily argue is probably one of the most important shows in the country right now. And as I'm thinking about that, I wanted to ask you, why Surrealism and Us, and why now?
Well, thank you for that. That's very generous. So why not now, I guess? I think that like every single time there's our moments that we cannot fully use just pure reason to understand what's going on. Using our dreams, using our kind of spiritual strength, using our imagination and creativity are always good sources to kind of create new worlds. So I think that for me, every time there is conflict, which I think conflict is part of human nature, so it's not going to go anywhere, it's good to think about new ways of being.
Absolutely. And in your interest in finding connections between Latinx, Latin American, and Black communities among the U.S. and the Caribbean through your curatorial approach, how did this show come to life?
So I started working on this show in 2017, and I was in Dusseldorf when I saw a show on Egyptian surrealism. And I thought, oh, wow, we could totally do something about this with the Caribbean. And like many people, this is not a history that is perhaps like a chapter on a traditional art history book. So I just started researching. It was just all in front of me, you know, Suzanne Césaire. I met Césaire, which of course is the father of Negritude. So he was very in my imagination. Lucero Lama as well. Then the passage of Azerbaijan through the Caribbean, which I knew about his time in Mexico, but his time in Martinique and Haiti were not as familiar to me. So it just became, the story was in front of me. So it was just became, and there were also other scholars that were dealing with this narrative. So it became very fertile ground quite easily. Then, at the time, it was 2017, so it was 2024, is now the centennial of the Surrealist Manifesto. But it was the beginning of a lot of people, other institutions doing shows that were kind of trying to expand, given the centennial, trying to expand the narrative, right, of how surrealism was emerged or co-opted or used in different contexts. So then I feel like there was also this kind of moment in which a lot of museums and scholars are looking at this movement. So, for example, the Met did the show Surrealism Beyond Borders during the pandemic, and then the Pompidou is about to do another surrealism show as well. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, and I'm interested in those connections just because it's my who I am, and it just allows me to understand my world in an easier way. For example, I grew up, my parents, they were not art collectors in any way, but they had like a little poster of Dalí's portrait of Lincoln. So like, to me, I go back to growing up with that image, and of course, the image of Abraham Lincoln, what it means to a lot of us, and then know that it was actually done by a Spanish realist painter who himself, you know, that he was very controversial, but still, like, it just gives me clues about the people that are informing my own context.
Definitely. And we are so, as human beings, we're so complex and so complicated and have so many different layers and a lot. And also, there are so many things that exist that are sort of binary, right, within us, within the way we see ourselves, within the way the world is organized. And so to be an artist like Dalí, but painting a figure like Lincoln may seem so far removed from each other. And yet, I'm sure there are so many parallels to be drawn, right, between individual lives. But as you answered that question, I want to talk a little bit about the show that you mentioned on seeing surrealist work on Egypt in Germany. And in thinking about the way travel can be a space for exploration, a space to more deeply investigate ideas that are coming to you, how have some of your travels and the things that you've done when you've been away from home and in different parts of the world deeply influenced your work?
Oh, I mean, it certainly, like, of course, reinforces who I am. It challenges who I am as well, and it just gives me inspiration. So it's a little bit of everything. I encourage people to travel, especially young curators and artists, to go and explore other contexts. I spent a little bit of my career in Mexico City, which Mexico City is a cultural hub, an amazing, fantastical place to spend time in or live in, and that was also very influential in my career. So yeah, travel is important. I think it's also tiring and it's also exhausting, but it's very important. I do want to kind of go back to something you said about the things that might not seem connected, but they are when you mentioned. I think that with this topic in particular of like the surreal and the and Martinique and the French Caribbean, like it's not a coincidence that Breton, who was a refugee, really escaping the Nazi government in France, ended up in a French colony. The same way that it's a natural flow for me as a Puerto Rican coming in the U.S., given the political relationship between Puerto Rico and the U.S. And I think that what I've enjoyed about this project is that ability to think about how the same way things that like colonization in the Caribbean impacted everyday life in Europe, and vice versa, and how this is not like, these are not like isolated universals, rather we're all together in creating context, which I think that often for people like us and the work that we do that tries to kind of expand narratives and challenge, right, with capital C, sometimes those type of practices can feel very isolating. But I think that if we start thinking about, actually, no, we're all implicated in the story and we're all part of it. I find it a more useful and a more kind of more honest to the human experience too.
Totally. I love that addition and what you're sharing, because I think that so often we live in a society where people are pit against each other, ideas are pit against each other. There's all of these messages that you're receiving that are telling you how different you are from someone else, coming from a very individualistic society in the West, and thinking about how that has culminated in so many just dynamics and situations that people live in. And that in order to even have conversations about this thing that we do, this life that we live, the work that we're interested in, the culture that we're part of, the ideas that we want to challenge, that in order to do that, you have to look at the whole thing. You can't just look at one piece, right? And so I love that you shared that because I think it's critical. I want to go back a little bit to about a decade earlier in your career, when in 2024, you were the recipient of the CPPC Travel Award, and you visited different nations in the Caribbean, Aruba, the Bahamas, Martinique, and Trinidad and Tobago. And as I was doing a little bit of research in prep for this call, I was thinking about how it's 10 years later, you've just put on this show, and some of the artists in the show represent some of these nations, and sort of wondering, what were some of the things early on in your career that you, that maybe in your opinion today have gotten you to this place?
Yes. So yes, in 2014, I received that grant. Yeah, 10 years ago. You're right. I didn't realize that until now. When I got that grant, I grew up in Puerto Rico, as I already said, and in Puerto Rico, it's an island, and like any island or even just big city, because I think New York is similar. Oh, I guess Manhattan is an island. Well, anyway, it's very insular, and you're kind of always looking at yourself. And I was very, of course, familiar with Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Mexico, like kind of the closest metropolis of Spanish-speaking countries, but the English-speaking Caribbean, the Dutch Caribbean, the French Caribbean, they were completely obscure to me. They weren't, and to make a matter worse, because of the legacy of the Haitian Revolution, which were often people in now Haiti's in the news, going through a rough time. People often talk about, in Puerto Rico when I was growing up, they would talk about Haiti in terms of, well, Puerto Rico doesn't want to be like Haiti. Puerto Rico doesn't want to fight for independence, because then you're going to end up like in that situation. So even the rhetoric that I was getting about neighboring islands was not that great versus just talking about how great the revolution was. It's just like the only successful black revolution in the Americas, right? So I didn't know about what was going on around me, even though there's always been a lot of exchanges across the island, especially before the Second World War, because there's like natural currents that take you. So I really wanted to just go to the non-Spanish-speaking Caribbean. I'll never forget the first time I was in Trinidad, like seeing all the Indian influence and culture, because I had a big labor migration from India, eating my first roti there and being very confused yet completely delighted by kind of eating this piece of bread that had plantain but curry, and it was spicy, and I grew up eating plantain. And then also kind of seeing, by the time I got to that research trip, I had already spent time in the American South because I was older, and kind of seeing those connections between like Martinique, for example, and how in a way it felt like the same kind of American South culture in a little ways. So it was just fascinating to just kind of get to know my neighbors, basically. And that's one thing I'll say, talk about travel. Sometimes we think that travel and being surprised by a new context is getting on a plane and going miles and miles away, but sometimes it's just really just knowing your neighbor. And just by, and especially in a country like the U.S., which is huge, I would imagine that if you grew up in New Orleans, going to Portland is going to be a surprise. And even if you grew up in New York, going to Charleston is going to be a surprise. So I think that, or just going, and even now more so, just going to the neighborhood in your city that you've never been to. So.
Yeah, that's such a great point. As somebody who's been to both New Orleans and Portland, and they are so different, like, couldn't be more different. And also being a New Yorker and growing up in Brooklyn and living in Harlem and living in the city my whole life, basically, it's been interesting to travel throughout the U.S. And I have a tendency to always want to go outside.
And I think that that's probably because the first time that I traveled really was out of the country when I was really young. And so I think there's always been this desire to do more of that and kind of take a backseat to like the internal kind of like neighboring states, neighboring places. But I love that you brought that up because there's so much here for us to learn from in terms of learning from your neighbor, right? And that sentiment. I want to go back a little bit to a bit of your origin story and ask you, like, where does your passion for culture and art come from?
Where does my passion?
Yeah, your passion for culture, for art.
I think that part of it is like growing up in an island, because it does feel like you kind of want to see the world. I think that Puerto Rico is different types of people. There's some that commit to the island. There's others that just want to go and sprawl. I think I'm definitely that person. At the same time, in Puerto Rico, there's a lot of culture. So like in a lot of, it can be hard to live there in terms of like the everyday grind, but you're always going to have a good dance. You're always going to have a great conversation. You're always going to have great food. You're always going to be, there's a lot of value there in terms of what culture is and can do. And I think that we take pride, Puerto Ricans, we take a lot of pride in our culture. So I definitely think that it's like a cultural thing. And also like just the context, like I think where I grew up, where you kind of had to fight for what you wanted. And believe in it strongly. And that's something that again, I think, for better or worse, a lot of Puerto Ricans get that stereotype of being passionate and being kind of, not intense, but like Rosie Perez type of archetype, which is partly true, partly not. We're all different. But I think that there's like a cultural there. And just my own curiosity, like, I'm actually not very intense in terms of character, but I talk really late. I was an observer child, like one of those kids that would, I think I started talking when I was like 5, so I was always kind of looking. And my mom says that to my uncles, she has like a problem, but she knew that I was there, so she never really investigated. And then she just said that one day at 5, I started talking and I never shut up. Yeah.
That's hilarious. What's really funny, like, as a child, I was really taught, like, I love that you brought this up because I was the complete opposite. Like, I would not stop talking. I always had something to say. I was always up in everybody's business when I was really young. But as an adult, like, I actually, and what's also funny is that I feel like I talk to people for a living, right? Like, this is my work. It's all about talking. It's all about communicating ideas. But in my personal life, I'm very quiet. Like, I actually don't really have a lot to say. And I'm very kind of like, in my own way, very reserved, right? Which is so fun to just think about that.
Well, I think sometimes when you're kind of taking people's energy by talking, you do need times to kind of recharge on your own. So that's probably something there.
Definitely.
I also should mention I'm one of 5 kids and I grew up in a big family. So like that was also probably part of learning, having to hustle early on to get what you wanted. I wasn't as successful all the time because I was in somewhere in the middle, but yeah, I knew I had to speak up.
Definitely, definitely. Getting back to the show, Surrealism and Us, on view right now at the Modern Fort Worth, Texas, until, is it July?
July. Yes. July 18th. So it feels far away, but it's tomorrow. So if anybody wants to come, just make sure you come soon. Because also, once the Texas summer comes along, it's going to be different weather. It's good. It's really good for like cleaning your pores and all that. But if you're used to... If you're not used to the triple digits, it might not be your jam.
Right. So get on that plane and come down now. Don't play around. But as we continue with the episode, what's it been like for you coming back to Texas? I know you finished your undergrad degree there. And what do you specifically like about being back?
I love Texas. I don't know if it's like the culture of like loving Texas that kicks you in once you kind of are here. But I really enjoy it. Like, I have to say, when I was in Houston, finished my undergrad, it was a professor in Houston that told me, oh, you should go into museum work. You should be a curator. And now I find, like, wow, like, I was told here, sometimes you need that for better, especially like when you are of a certain background that, like, I didn't grow up with, like, going to my parents, like, I didn't grow up in the art world, so I didn't know that you could have a role within the art world that it wasn't being an artist or being a professor or a teacher. So it was really helpful that somebody had kind of said, you should do this, you're good at that. So now I feel like I can kind of do full circle, right? From the moment that after that, I was like, yes, I'm going to do it. And I did my career and I left and now I'm back. So I really like that. I also like the commitment and the passion that cultural institutions and patrons have here for the arts. I think that almost all major cities have great collections and great collectors and great artists. So that has been just great to see. And also because of that, the audiences here are very educated in the art. I spent almost 10 years in Miami, which was a great experience. And there we were kind of building the first big museum for the city. And there was a lot of conversations about what that meant for audiences. Here is quite, it's been the opposite. People, the audiences here know, kind of have a great anchors in art. And it's been surprising just walking around the galleries and seeing people talk about it and engage. So that has been really great. And I'm just excited to share my perspective and the knowledge that I've learned in all this time with here in the DFW. And I also think Texas is a very diverse state. It has a lot of interesting history. So I'm just very inspired right now.
I love that. And I'm glad that you talked about a few things in that response, like one, being there, seeing the audience, thinking about what you did at the PAM, what you'll do now at the Modern, thinking about how you initially moved forward in your field after your education and that important word from a professor and the way that that can be so impactful for someone that another person can kind of see you or see something in you and say, hey, this might be a great thing for you. Like, don't shy away from that. And in thinking about that, I wanted to pull up on a few things that you shared in an article for the Fort Worth Report in 2022 when it was first announced that you would be making this transition. And you started speaking a little bit about how you can bring through the work that you want to do at the Modern, because this was earlier, this was in 2022, you were talking about bringing forward histories that are not often spoken about. And when you just talked about not knowing that there could be other careers in the arts outside of being an artist, I started thinking about this quote, right? And the idea that people might not know these histories that you're bringing to the forefront through the work of these incredible artists and through the lens of surrealism itself. Could you speak a little bit more about the idea?
So, you know, the exhibition, it includes works from the 1940s to the present. And it has, like, iconic artists, like Lucille Ball, for example. Or Melvin Edwards, who was actually from Houston.
Wow.
Lorena Grady, yeah. Nick Cave, Kara Walker. Like, it has, like, over 60 artists. And of those 60 artists, there's only one that have exhibited at the Modern before, which is Kara Walker. And actually, the same work that is on view is the work that was part of a traveling show that came to the Modern when she was starting her career. Which is quite interesting because my museum, they have been really good at, like, kind of tapping into, like, the artists that are significant, like, early on, like Kara Walker or Candy Wiley. But there's only so much that you could do at a museum, right? You could not show everybody. So it's been interesting to kind of add and complement the stories that the museum has told very well, like the history of American abstraction, and add another counterpart to that. And I think it's important because the title of our institution is the Modern Art Museum. It's a big title. And if we're talking about modernity and that experience in the contemporary moment, we then must be able to speak about it in a comprehensive way, right? And it is a way that allows us to understand all those practices better. So, for example, Jackson Pollock. He is another icon of American abstraction. He was a student of David Alfonso Gatos in Mexico City. And David Alfonso Gatos actually taught him how to paint with the control accident technique that Zagato's invented and champion. So there we learn another story about Pollock that is very rich and interesting. And those are the types of conversations that I have dedicated my career to, which is kind of adding, expanding, very much being enthralled by all these art histories and how they're all connected together. And it's been, I mean, at first I was, I mean, I'm not going to, I was a little bit like, oh, I wonder how this is going to be received, but it's been received with open arms. Like, people really want to, because they're such, I feel like the audiences here are so well exposed to art that they're like, yes, I want more, and I just want to continue knowing what I know, but I can, even though I want to continue knowing that, I'm still open to, and I want to learn something new. Why not, you know?
Definitely.
Why not?
Definitely. And as a final question to sort of round out the episode, in your opinion, what has, if potentially Western history has gotten it wrong, what has Western history gotten wrong about modern art? And why are shows like Surrealism and Us so important to cultural exchange, historical record keeping, and understanding the legacies of artistic production of African and Caribbean cultures?
You know, I think that, like, and I wouldn't say, I wouldn't, like, I don't like, good or bad, because I feel like things are more complex than that. I think that there's need to be a more, like, expansive way to think about history. That's really where I think, and I think that a lot of that is just circumstantial, in terms that, like, well, if you have the same type of people talking about a subject, most likely they're just going to talk about what they know. So I think it's good to include other voices in the mix so that you get multiple sides of a situation. And it's like just the same way that you would think about your group of friends or your group of, or a given situation. Like, it's good to have multiple perspectives. So I think that modern art needs to, there's a lot of potential for growth, for including multiple perspectives. And I think that's important because, for better or worse, the U.S. is a country built different ideas from different people from all over the world with different cultural experiences. So the more I learn about you, and the more you learn about me, the more we can work together.
I love that. That's such a beautiful sentiment to end the episode with. And Maria Elena Ortiz, thank you so much for joining me on an episode. Everyone listening, you need to go see the show, Surrealism and Us, at the Modern Fort Worth. On view until July
28th.
July 28th.
Yes. And if you want to just know more about me and what I do, you can follow me on IG at Contemporary Chica.
Please do that. Thank you again so much, Maria.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This was great. That was my episode with Maria Elena Ortiz. I want to give a big shout out and a big thank you to Maria for joining me on the show. And it's a wrap, folks. That was our episode of Everything is Connected, conversations on culture and current events with some of today's hottest creative contemporaries. These episodes are recorded remotely and on location wherever in the world I find myself, whether that be the US, Africa, Europe, the Middle East, the Caribbean, and more. Depending on where I am at the time of these recordings, you will hear the sights and the sounds of my local environment. I look forward to continuing these wonderful conversations with artists and creative professionals across industries with you. I'm your host, Folashade Ologundudu, and we'll see you next time. As always, stay motivated, stay inspired, and stay up. Peace and love, y'all. We out.